Thank you for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to talk about a method for designing concurrent data structures for non-volatile RAM today. And this is work I've done together with Alexander Dragojevich from MSR in Cambridge and with Igor Zablotsky and Rashid Gerawi from EPFL. All right, so in this work, we've looked at data structures that generally run in memory. So these are high-performance data structures, and they are the kind of data structures that you encounter very often in practical systems. So you have a lot of classes of systems that you use in-memory data structures, from operating systems to key-value stores, databases, and so on. And you can find a large diversity of data structures. You can find lists, hash tables, trees, skip lists, and so on being used in these systems. Now, a common feature of many of these data structures, especially the ones that provide high performance, is that they implement the set interface. So they at least have methods to insert, remove, and search for elements. Of course, there are other data structure types, but for the purposes of this talk, I will mostly be focusing on data structures that model the set abstraction. Now, if you look at the overall performance of the system, you will find that it's heavily impacted by the performance of these data structures, these concurrent data structures that are at its core. So it's really important to get these data structures right. And if you look at how an ideal data structure would look like in practice, well, you would want it to be fast in the common case when it's just one thread executing it. But you would also like it to be scalable. So given that every processor is a multi-core today, you can expect multiple concurrent threads to be accessing your data structure. And you would like your throughput to increase proportionally to the number of threads, ideally. So that's what we want from an in-memory data structure. However, as technology evolves, the very meaning of in-memory might change. So for example, in the next few years, we expect to get fast, byte-addressable, non-volatile RAM. So essentially, now we'll have durable data in RAM. And if data structure algorithms and software systems are to take advantage of this technology, well, then they should provide consistent, durable state. So in case a restart occurs, the durably stored state should make sense after the restart. So to this wish list of ideal characteristics for a data structure, we can also add durable. Now, an interesting research question here that we and other people have been looking into is, how can we maintain the performance of these data structures as much as possible while also ensuring the consistency of the durable state? So again, if a restart occurs, you should be able to continue the execution. Otherwise, you're not really taking advantage of this technology. And I'm going to explain a bit why this is a challenge. So first of all, just a couple of words about non-volatile RAM. So you can think of it as byte addressable. You can map it to a region of virtual memory. So for all intents and purposes, you can work with it pretty similarly as, like you would with standard DRAM. Of course, in addition, it offers durability. In terms of latencies, although we're not quite there yet, projections are that we'll get pretty close to the latencies of DRAM. So why is working with NVRAM not easy? So let's take a very simple example of an operation that often happens in data structures. Let's say that I want to insert a new node. So what I would do is I would allocate some memory, initialize it with some content, maybe add a couple of links to it in the data structure, and perhaps set a flag saying that I'm done with my operation. Now, ensuring these stores occur in the order in which I want them to when I'm not working with non-volatile state is pretty simple. As long as I take care of the memory consistency model of my processor, I can have these stores appear in the order in which I want them to in the write-back caches. However, when the underlying layer is non-volatile, there are a couple of challenges here. The first is due to the fact that by default, we cannot expect the write-back caches to be non-volatile as well. The second challenge is due to the fact that, again, by default, we do not control the order in which cache lines are evicted from the write-back caches and written back to RAM. And that might cause some issues. So in this very simple example, it might be the case that the cache line where I set a pointer to my newly allocated node gets written to RAM. The cache line with containing the flag saying that I'm done with my transaction is written to RAM. And then a crash occurs. And after restart, I just have a pointer to some uninitialized memory without any content there. So that's a problem. So the first thing to do here to fix this is to control the order in which we persist our stores. In this work, we've assumed Intel processors, but other processors also have similar instructions. On Intel processors, we've considered cache-lite write-back instructions. They will be available on upcoming iterations of Intel processors. As the name of the instruction says, the cache line is written back to non-volatile RAM without invalidating it from the cache, which is the difference when compared to current instructions present on such processors. From a performance standpoint, I should mention that it's important that these instructions are not ordered with respect to one another. So if you issue multiple writebacks, one after the other, they will, to an extent, be able to proceed in parallel. If you want an ordering point, you should use a store fence or some other instruction that has an implicit store fence in it. So from a performance standpoint, that's important because, well, according to what Intel reports, batching these such writebacks is up to an order of magnitude faster than doing them one at a time and issuing a store fence after each. Okay, so now we know how to control the order in which our stores go all the way to NVRAM. But we're still not completely done. And that's because it might still happen that a restart occurs while we were in the middle of this operation, so without having finished it. And after restart, well, we don't know. Is this a consistent state? Were we done with the operation? So the technique that's been widely used until now, and the default technique being used in this scenario, is to use some form of logging. So you either log enough information to be able to finish your operation after restart, or you log enough information to be able to undo the effects of the partly executed transaction here. So in this example, we would have to log all our stores there. Now, you don't need to pay attention to every instruction there. The point I'm trying to make here is that we started from something very simple, and we ended up with some code where we do frequent writebacks to non-volatile RAM, and we frequently need to wait for these writebacks to complete. That's especially the case with logging, where you cannot execute the instruction depending on the log until the log has been written. And that's really problematic in the case of such data structures, if you think about it. Normally, when you would do a store, an update to such a data structure, your stores would go to your L1 cache. That would cost a handful of cycles. Now, we're frequently doing stores that we need to wait until they go all the way to NVRAM, and that's orders of magnitude slower. And in particular, the logging is problematic because, as I said, we need to wait for the log to be written before we can proceed with the instructions which depend on it. So our work is about this. In the case of such data structures, how can we minimize the amount of logging that we do, and how can we remove the amount of writebacks as much as possible? And we do this through three techniques that are generally applicable to various data structures. The first gives you correct implementations of such durable data structures that require no logging in the common case, actually at all in the algorithm. The second technique takes advantage of batching to remove the number of writebacks being done in the data structure algorithm even more. And the third technique deals with another issue that's inherent when you're working with concurrent data structures, which is memory management. And by doing coarse-grained memory management, we remove, again, logging in the common case. So you can apply these techniques to basically any type of linked data structures, and we call the resulting implementations, by a bit of abuse of language here, log-free concurrent data structures. Okay, so in the following, I'm going to talk a bit about each of these in turn. So first, getting correct data structures that do not require any logging in the algorithm itself. So first, we observed that a class of concurrent algorithms called lock-free algorithms have the nice side effect of always leaving the data structure in a state from which execution can continue as long as stores are persisted in program order. Now, we're not the first to observe this, but we're the first to provide implementations for a wide spectrum of such data structures for NVRAM. However, this observation is only half of correctness if you think about it. So even though we might have a state that allows us to continue execution after a restart, some inconsistencies might still happen. So think about this. What if I'm trying to, as a client, search for an object X? My algorithm tells me that the object X is in the set. A restart occurs, and after the restart, even though I can continue with the execution of my system, the state no longer reflects object X in there. That's still a bit problematic. So we need an additional condition here that's specific to non-volatile RAM. And for the purposes of this work, we've used a correctness condition called durable linearizability, which has been proposed a couple of years ago. Now, to simplify things a bit, what this says is that the state after a restart should reflect all the operations that were linearized before the crash. And achieving this is not as trivial as one might think. So let's take a very simple example, a linked list, the simplest data structure. And let's say that I want to insert an element into this linked list. So there are a few steps that I need to take. First, I of course need to allocate and initialize the node that I want to insert with some content. Then I need to add a link to the new node in the data structure. And then I need to make sure that this link in turn is written to non-volatile RAM. Now, if a crash occurs between steps 2 and 3 here in this picture, we actually have a violation of durable linearizability with all the inconsistencies that can come from that one, similar to the example I've just given. So we've solved this with a technique that's inspired from other methods widely used in concurrent algorithms. We call this the link and persist technique. And it works as follows. So again, I'm using the insertion example in a linked list, but we can use this for any modification of a link in such data structures. So again, we persistently allocate and initialize our new node with content. We add a link to it in the data structure, but we add a link that's marked. And the mark on the link signifies the fact that we are not sure yet that this link has been written all the way to non-volatile RAM. So it might or might not have been written. Then we persist the newly added link, and then we remove the mark. And this is particularly useful when you have concurrency, because other threads might be accessing this link. Other threads might depend on the presence or absence of that node in the data structure. So if another thread directly depends on that link, it can use a technique that's called helping in concurrent programming, by which it finishes the operation itself. So it persists the link of the newly added node, and it removes the mark. So essentially what we get here is an atomic way of modifying and persisting a link in a data structure, and we call this link and persist. This is enough to give you correctness of the implementations, and we go into more details as to why this is sufficient in the paper. Okay, so we're not doing any logging in the data structure, but we're still persisting links, and we're waiting for those links to be persisted, and we were wondering, can we go even further? Can we avoid waiting for every modified link to be persisted? And we make the following observation, that a link only truly needs to be persisted when there's an operation that depends on it that's linearized. So with that in mind, what we propose is to just store all the unpersisted links in a very fast, concurrent, volatile memory cache. And when there's some operation that truly requires one of these links to be persisted, we issue writebacks for all of the links in that small cache. We issue a store fence only at the end, and we empty the cache. So we essentially take advantage of batching. So here's how that would work. So we have this small hash table. It's indexed by key. It contains link addresses, so links that have been recently modified. Let's say that I want to insert an object X. So instead of waiting for the link to the new object to be persisted, I insert an entry in the small cache, indexed by key X, containing the link of the address of the recently modified link. And then if at some future point I do a read of object X, I first need to check this small cache. I see that there's a hit. I have an entry corresponding to key X. So I issue writebacks for all the links in there, and I empty the cache. So by taking advantage of batching, we only wait once for all of these links to be persisted. The third issue we looked at was memory allocation and reclamation. And that's really an inherent issue when you're dealing with concurrent data structure. So whenever you're inserting or removing an element, there are two main steps that you need to take. When you're inserting something, first you need to allocate it and initialize it with content. And second, you need to actually link it in your data structure. When deleting an element, you need to first unlink it. And then at some future point, when you know that no references to it exist, you can free it. Now, in both cases, if a restart occurs in between these two main steps, you have a persistent memory leak, which is really bad, because unless you somehow deal with it, it's a memory leak that's going to be there forever. So again, the standard approach that's been used so far is to use logging. So you log the fact that you're about to allocate this memory and then link it in the data structure, and you log the fact that you're about to unlink this memory and then it should be freed. And then if a crash occurs, you can use these log entries to solve the issue. However, we make the following observation. So if you look at high-performance concurrent memory allocators today, the way they work is like this. So each thread is assigned a larger chunk of memory, and then each thread is responsible for carving this into smaller pieces and assigning it to the application. And in particular, if you're allocating objects of a similar type, like we are here, we're allocating data structure nodes, consecutive allocations will have very similar memory addresses. So they will more or less belong to the same memory area. For memory reclamation, so as I said, when you're reclaiming memory before freeing an object, you need to wait to be sure that there are no references to it held by any thread in the system. Now, doing this on a per object basis and waiting until you know that the last link has been precisely removed is a bit costly. So what's done is an approach that's a bit coarser grained. So we collect a large number of unlinked nodes from the data structure. Periodically, we check to see if there might be a reference to any of the unlinked nodes. When the answer is no, we free them all together. So we free a large number of nodes at the same time. Now, if you do this, if you free a large number of nodes at the same time, several of them are again bound to belong to the same memory area. So in this simple example, I'm freeing six nodes, and three belong to the green memory area, and three map to the blue memory area. So the point I'm trying to make here is that there is locality in both allocations and deallocations. And with that in mind, what we propose is that instead of logging each individual allocation or deallocation, well, what if we just log the active memory areas? In the common case, we won't have to log anything because of locality. Those areas will have already been marked as active. Of course, that means that when a restart occurs, we do need to traverse the memory areas that were active at the moment of the crash and figure out what exactly in there should be kept as allocated and what should be freed. But our results show that this is not costly at all. OK, so this is the main approach to memory allocation and reclamation. Exactly how we do it is described in much more detail in the paper. So now, very briefly for some results. So we don't have this extremely fast byte-addressable NVRM just yet. So we used a simulation. We injected latencies for write-backs to NVRAM. We compared with a read-the-log-based implementation. We found that for such data structures where we can fine-tune the logging and where we require durable linearizability from the log-based implementations as well, the read-the-log was somewhat more efficient. And what I'm showing here is the speed-up of our updates when compared to this read-the-log-based implementation. I'm showing this for a hash table. In the paper, we have other types of data structures as well. So I'm showing this for different data structure sizes and for a single-threaded environment in orange and for a multi-threaded environment with eight concurrent updaters in red. And what we notice is that we have speed-ups basically regardless of the scenario. So we're three times faster for small data structures and 1.32 times faster for large data structures. And this is an observation that I should make. We are more efficient for small and medium-sized data structures, so our method is particularly well-suited for such small latency data structures for reasons we go into more detail in the paper. Of course, in the paper, we have many more such micro-benchmarks. I'll just end with an experiment looking at a larger system. So we took Memcached. It's an in-memory caching system. Now, of course, applications don't generally depend on the content of Memcached being present after restart, but repopulating this cache after restart can be quite costly. So we wanted to see what's the cost of making this durable and how does this help with recovery time. So first of all, we took a lock-free version of Memcached since we were working with lock-free algorithms here for these data structures. We replaced its hash table and its slab allocator with alternatives that are based on the techniques I just presented. And in the first figure, I'm showing how throughput compares for the original Memcached, for Memcached CLHD, which is the lock-free volatile version of Memcached, and then our non-volatile version of Memcached. And it turns out we're only about 5% slower than the volatile lock-free version of Memcached, and sometimes we're faster than the original Memcached, actually. In terms of recovery time, we're actually up to three order of magnitudes faster, so this is where this would really be useful in the context of Memcached. Now, of course, a persistent key value store has other uses as, well, some talks in this conference will attest. OK, so I will end here. So to summarize, I've presented log-free concurrent data structures, which is a set of three generic techniques that yield data structures that are efficient in an environment having non-volatile RAM. We observed that these techniques give you up to several times performance improvements. Of course, I've just scratched the surface in this talk, so refer to the paper for more detail regarding each of the techniques and for a lot more experimental results. So thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd like to take them.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Dalia.
Hi. First of all, very nice work, very nice talk. I'm Dalia from VMware. Quick questions about the write cache to preserve durable linear reusability. Doesn't that need to also be written in a particular, persisted in a particular order that needs to be enforced? And secondly, what happens if parts of it get persisted without your control, kind of get evicted?
So, The link cache does not need to be persisted because it only contains links pertaining to operations that were not linearized yet. So an operation is linearized when its link is written back from the cache. So that does not violate durable linearizability because durable linearizability allows operations that were not yet linearized but in progress at the moment of the crash to either appear in durable state or not. And this might indeed be the case for links that are present in the cache. But if, after restart, a link in the cache is not durably visible, it means that no operation depending on it ever happened, and the operation itself was not marked as being linearized.
Hi, Mickey from New Toronto. So I'm not really familiar with NVRAM, but what sort of architectural guarantees do you need from NVRAM to be able to do this? For example, like usually lock-free data structures require some sort of atomic compare and set or test and set. They require that if you write a word to the memory, all of it has been written regardless of any failures. So what sort of promises do you need from the NVRAM?
Right, so we don't need compare and swap and so on from the NVRAM itself. We need it in the processor, of course. So as long as this has effect on the data that appears in the write back caches, we're fine. So we actually don't require anything from that perspective. We do require, yes, a certain level of write atomicity, right, at some point, which we get by level.
All right.
Actually, can we go to the next question?
Yeah,
thanks. Let's stick to one question per person if we
Peter
can.
Peter Desnoyers, Northeastern. I wanted to follow up on Dahlia's question about durable linearizability. So I'm not as familiar with it as I should be. And it seems as if this means that not only will this not be, well, this won't be flushed until a thread does a read on something, which also means that you can't report over the network that it was persisted unless you actually do the equivalent of an fsync. Is that true?
So I should say that this cache is very small. We have 32 entries. So there are two scenarios, actually, in which a write-back occurs. One is when a bucket becomes full, which we have 6 entries per bucket, it just becomes flushed. Or the second, when either a read that depends on the data or actually an update that depends on that data happens. So yes, there are two ways in which the cache can be flushed. One is when a read occurs, and the second is just when, I don't know, 6 operations or mapping to the same bucket occur, again, it gets flushed. But then it's only at that point that you can report over the network that the operation has been finished. But of course, this is an optimization that can be turned on or off depending on the necessities of your workload.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.